Hello, everyone, and welcome to the EFG Daily Commute. This is episode 32, and this is January 3rd of 2019. Yes, I have to start getting used to saying the right year. My bet right now is that I will get it wrong at least five or six times in the next couple of weeks, so give me a little bit of a break, because like I said, I record this while I'm driving to work. My name is Steven. I am the editor-in-chief and founder of EngageFamilyGaming.com, and I am the host of this here podcast. This is where you join me on my ride to work in downtown Hartford, where I talk about a different gaming topic every day. So today, I wanted to just get right into it. Today, we're going to talk about the Engage Family Gaming Games of the Year for 2018. I've told everybody about one of them. I'll save that to the end in case you are discovering this new, but most people know about at least one of them, but I wanted to talk about all of our games. We give out a number of accolades. Basically, I have some honorable mentions. I have a grown-up Game of the Year, and then I usually pick between four and five Games of the Year, and part of that is because I really don't think that, with very few exceptions, I don't think there is just one true Game of the Year. Many games are so different, they're so diverse, it's really hard for me to just kind of nail everything down. And while I might have a favorite, I think there are a number of games that are worthy of recognition. So I do a list as opposed to just one. So here we go. First, let's talk about the honorable mentions. These are games that didn't quite make the cut for the final list for one reason or another, but I think are still worth mentioning. And the first one, and this is, some people will think it's a surprise, others will not. That's just because that's the nature of this game, and that is Fortnite. I think Fortnite has a case to be made for being the Game of the Year. It's clearly the biggest game of the year. It's a cultural phenomenon. I mean, how many of us bought V-Bucks through various weird channels for our kids for Christmas this year, or for, you know, birthdays? There's all the lawsuits and stuff happening, but this game is millions strong, and it does not show signs of slowing down. I think maybe it's reached its peak, but I think it's going to just live there for a while. And man, it is just, it's everywhere. And so, there's a couple things against it that some people might argue would prevent it from being a true Game of the Year. And that would be, number one, it didn't come out this year. It actually technically released last September. I don't really care about that per se. It came out last September to a whimper. And I remember listening to a news story on Kinda Funny Games Daily, you know, towards the end of the year, where they were talking about how they were going to add a Battle Royale mode. And it just exploded from there. And it really was the Battle Royale mode and its free-to-play mode just kind of killing it that really made a big difference. So is it the best game I've ever played? No. But I've always been a believer that games of the year are not necessarily our favorite games. I think impactful games, on the industry make a difference. One of my games of the year back in, I think, 2012, was Farmville, just because it was so big. And it was inescapable. There were people playing this game that just never should have had business. You never would have played games. And I think Fortnite is kind of doing the same thing. It's kind of crossing some of those boundaries. And man, is it so, I mean, it's great, in its own right. I mean, it's not the best game ever, but it is certainly a game that's going to define a generation. There are groups of kids who are going to remember Fortnite fondly for the rest of their lives, the same way people my age might, excuse me, there are people my age who talk about GoldenEye as though it is, one of the best games ever made, and it's their favorite, and they talk about it, and they talk about the late-night multiplayer, and, all this stuff. there's going to be a generation of kids who grow up into people like us talking about Fortnite the way we talk about GoldenEye. And I think that's special. And that's something that really can't be ignored. You know, in previous years, there really aren't a lot of games that are going to do that, that are going to be remembered forever. So, yeah, I mean, that's Fortnite. I mean, we've talked about that a lot. I'm sure we're going to talk about it a lot more. Just as far as I am concerned, anyone who comes out and tries to objectively say that Fortnite is a bad game really just doesn't understand, and is hated. And it really comes down to the fact it's a divisive game. Some people don't like it. They don't like Battle Royale games at all. And I guess that's fine. However, Fortnite is a force to be reckoned with, and it's popular for a reason. And it's not just because of the kids. The kids play good games. They gravitate towards good games in general. And so here we are. So that's Fortnite. My second honorable mention is a game that I really haven't talked about a lot on, you know, some of our podcasts, etc. And that is Octopath Traveler. Octopath Traveler is on this list because it was the coolest looking game I have played in a very freaking long time. They somehow managed to create a unique art style and apply it to a throwback style RPG on the Switch, and man, did it captivate me. I wanted to love it more. I wanted for it to be my favorite game of all time. I wanted, just because that art style just grabbed me, and I really loved watching it. There were two problems that I had with that game. One of them is that I really had trouble, like, getting attached to the characters by nature of the fact that, the developers, rather than having one main story, just kind of had eight main stories, and so as a result, none of them felt like they had weight. And I know, you know, you choose a character, and that one character is, you know, kind of quote unquote the main character, but not really. And they go on their quests alone, and for the most part, their adventures don't involve the other players, and there's not a lot. There's some interaction, but not a lot. Not as much as I would like. And, you know, it's just, there's just something about it that just felt like it lost some of the weight that you would have in another Final Fantasy game. So, the other piece is I loved the art style. However, the color palette was a little dark. And it just led even, like, bright and happy scenes to be, you know, a little muted. Not like it was full of those, but, you know, when you're walking into, like, a relatively cheerful village, they all just looked shadowed. And so I hope when they make the inevitable sequel for this game, that they give us a little bit more color, because I loved it, but I really think that it needs just a little bit more color to make make it more comfortable for me. Those are the negatives. On the positive side, holy moly, is this game fun to play. I haven't had an experience like this one mechanically with a role-playing game in a very long time. I enjoyed playing with the mechanics. I enjoyed, you know, tinkering with my group composition and figuring out which characters to use, and then when you unlock secondary classes, which happens, you know, towards the middle of the game, and you really get to customize the different characters, very similarly to, you know, the job system and other Final Fantasy style games, man, does this game really take off. I really enjoyed it, and, you know, I think for anybody that, you know, really enjoys JRPGs, especially like the turn-based mechanics, I think this is a must play. So that is Octopath Traveler. Came out around July. Yes, came out in July for the Nintendo Switch. So that is, those are my honorable mentions. Games that I can't really put at the top of the list for a few reasons. But I still wanted to discuss. So next is my grown-up game of the year. So my grown-up game of the year, I've talked about this on some podcasts, Geeking with the Moms and things like that, but my grown-up game of the year is God of War. And I was so surprised by this. God of War is a game that I never liked the other games in the series. I wanted to like them because I like action games. I really wanted to. But there was just, I couldn't love them. They were, in my mind, they were juvenile, and they were crass. And they were, the only reason that you would call them mature is because that's what the ESRB rated them at. But they certainly weren't mature, they were just profane. And that's fine, right? Like, I don't think the games shouldn't exist. They just weren't for me. They didn't really serve a purpose. And I really didn't particularly care for Kratos as a character outside of him as, like, iconography. And I respected the character. I knew who he was. And what's interesting is, if you understand his iconography, right? Like, this angry Greek warrior with, like, weapons supernaturally attached to his arms, you know the character. He's kind of a one-beat guy, and you didn't need to know much in the way of fine details, because there weren't any. He was just a broad strokes, like, this is just, the story is just to propel us forward so we could fight more big monsters and kill them in gruesome ways, and there's that. But something about, and I was kind of writing this game off, like, okay, great. Santa Monica's making another game. They do good work. I'm sure people will love it. I was going to be happy that it made people happy. But there was something about the way that Sony was pitching this game and marketing this game at their various conventions about how this was a completely different story, about how this was, I don't know if you can call it a redemption arc for Kratos, because really you can't, I don't know if he can ever be redeemed, but this was a opportunity to really kind of explore his character a little bit more. And I watched some of it, I read some previews, and yeah, I'm very glad that I started paying attention to this game, because it caught me by surprise, I think, more than just about any game I have ever played, I think. At the very least, it is the biggest good surprise I have ever gotten in a video game. And that's saying something. I really enjoyed myself with the experience. Man, I mean, it was, the story was cool. And also, like, beyond the story being cool, I really enjoyed my time with Kratos as a person. I know he has done some very dark things, and like I said, I don't know every dark thing he has done, because I did not play the other games, but I know he hunted down and killed most of a Greek pantheon, and that's kind of dark. But seeing him trying to raise a son, it's something that I identified with. Being a father is challenging, because your kids never see you as who you are, right? Like, they see you as who they think you are, as who they imagine you have become. And there are moments where you might let them down. And desperately afraid to tell Atreus, his son, who he was. Even in the face of Atreus knowing that something was going on. You know, Atreus always looked at his dad as a god, right? But not in a literal sense. You know, his father was strong and knew how to hunt and was a provider and was, you know, all of that, right? But he didn't know that his father could punch through stone or, you know, like, fight giants or, do, you know, have hand-to-hand combat with literal gods. He didn't know that that was in him. And, you know, trying to keep those secrets and trying to, you know, maintain that facade of what Atreus imagines him to be in the face of what he actually is, you know, I really kind of identified with that. I thought that was an interesting take on the character. The various plot twists, etc., in the game, very interesting. I really like the new setting. You know, Norse mythology is something that a lot of people are like pocket Norse mythology experts now because of the Thor movies, right? Like, you know some of the words. But this is an interesting way to, like, kind of tap into that little touch. I think, you know, if Kratos was going to escape Greece and go somewhere else, I absolutely agree that it makes sense that he would come here to the north to deal with the Norse gods than, say, you know, other pantheons that might be slightly more, maybe connected. Like, say, you know, going to Egypt or something like that. It's really interesting to see some of the choices they made design-wise. And how about this? We talked about this for a while, and I didn't even bring up the combat. I mean, the reality is this is a combat game first and a storytelling game, you know, 1B, right, as far as what their priorities were. And, man, did I enjoy the combat. This is obviously not a game for families, but it is a, you know, it's not for kids. It's not, right? I mean, he's got a big old axe, and he's, you know, punching dudes and axing dudes, and it's a mess. But there aren't too many, like, people, right? Like, he's fighting, you know, demons and monsters and shit like that. And it's, you don't really see too much of, you know, the same kind of gruesome level of violence from the first game. What I would say in this installment, it's intensity as opposed to and it's still brutal, but it's not just, you know, it doesn't feel like it was brainstormed by, like, a 13 and a 14-year-old boy being like, hey, how cool is this, right? No, it's like everything was on purpose and with intention. So anyway, that's my game. That my grown-up game of the year is God of War. And I'll be honest, I think it's going to be tough to top that one from my grown-up game of the year perspective moving forward. I don't know what is even going to come close next year. God of War is so good. So those are my kind of the extra stuff. Let's talk about the actual games of the year, and we'll count them down. These are in no particular order. The first one that I want to talk about is The Messenger. Man, The Messenger is so freaking good. Everybody knows, you know, if you're new to the EFG, multiverse of content, as I just called it for the first time and was probably wrong. I love me some retro inspired platformers. My game of the year in 2015 was Shovel Knight. I really enjoy games that are made with modern design sensibilities that reach out and touch my memories, my nostalgia for the NES and for the SNES. I really love that, and part of that is because I really want to love those, some of those older games, but I can't because they were not you know, many of them were not well made, or many of them were made to be incredibly difficult for no good reason. The Messenger is incredibly difficult, but for plenty of good reasons. There's a lot of game here. This is intended to be a challenge. It's intended to be an achievement. It's a super cool ninja game that does not in any way take itself seriously, which is probably my favorite part of it, because it's just hilarious at times. And it is, it feels like now what games, you know, it really leans into the absurdity of some of the games that were happening before, but what's interesting is it didn't feel crazy then. It felt like that's just the way video games were, and now it really is just kind of pointing out, like, hey, this is how stupid these games were. Because, I mean, let's be real, a lot of them were pretty dumb. So The Messenger, it's made by a company called Sabotage Games. They're based in Canada. And so you play as a ninja who is the messenger. Literally, your job is to take a scroll to the top of the mountain and fulfill a prophecy, more or less. And when you get there, this is just how funny this kind of thing is, like, the scroll has, like, all sorts of messages in it, and they're like, you spent all this time trying to get up to the top of this mountain, and you never bothered to, like, open it up and read it, because it has, like, all the instructions and explains everything in it, apparently. And that's just really funny to me, that they just kind of owned the fact that that scroll was just a MacGuffin. This was incredibly challenging, but what's crazy about this game is that there are two games in here. They have an 8-bit-ish ninja platforming game that is very similar, you know, it's very linear, level-based, very similar to Ninja Gaiden from the NES. And then somehow they decided to go through the effort of cramming in a second game, which is which was a 16-bit ish, like, exploratory, like, Metroidvania platformer, where you are the same guy, you're just, in the past, and man, and so you actually need to jump back and forth, jump back and forth through these time periods, and that changes the platforms and the monster positioning, and you have to use that to overcome challenges, go from place to place. It's an amazing experience. So, I really liked it. My favorite part is that they have this thing called the wind step, which is basically a second, you get another jump if you were to attack something, whether it be a candle, you know, kind of floating on the wall, or an enemy, or a projectile, and that helps you get extra jumps. And man, is that satisfying when you figure out how to get through a screen, and, you know, kind of take advantage of the different projectiles and other things. I can't wait to see this game get speedrun. AGDQ is coming up. Awesome Games Done Quick is coming up in a couple of weeks. I'm hoping it actually starts this weekend. I'm going to have to check the schedule, because I'm pretty sure that there is a messenger run happening. So, that's The Messenger. It's a very inexpensive game, but it's one of the best experiences I had. If you love retro-inspired platforming games, like I do, then The Messenger is required reading, or playing, as it were. I think everybody should give it a turn. And I think everybody will enjoy it. So that's The Messenger. Next is Smash. Not a lot more to say about Smash than I have not already said. Smash is an immaculate experience. It's huge. Every time I turn this game on, there's new content. And not because they keep adding to it. It's because I keep finding new stuff. New game modes. New tweaks that you can make to existing game modes. Quality of life improvements, which, you know, it's a fighting game. You wouldn't think that there would be, like, quality of life improvements, but, you know, the ability, for example, to make custom rule sets and save them so you can use them regularly. My sons have a specific set of rules that they play just for themselves. And, you know, we made another one just for New Year's Eve for the games that we were playing. And that's awesome. There's 73 fighters, all of which are pretty different. I mean, okay, one could argue that the various characters from Fire Emblem are close. But they're not the same. They're all pretty different. There's a variety. All the stages are beautiful. The music is amazing, and there is so much of it. And we have more game coming in the form of DLC. Smash is just great. If you like fighting games, or if you like big, wacky party games, or somewhere in between, Smash should definitely be at the top of your list. The next game is Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Pokemon Let's Go Eevee. I know technically, according to sales data, they're separate games, but as far as I'm concerned, they're the same. They're great games, man. I love the idea of playing Pokemon games. Right? Like, I always buy them, I always play them, and I put in like 20 to 25 hours. And then somewhere around that 25th hour, I fall off because of the grind. Right? And so, for better or for worse. This is the first game where that really hasn't happened. I mean, obviously the holidays happened and things got busy. You know, I haven't put in 1,000 hours into this game. However, you know, I have been able to, you know, keep playing this game, and enjoying it kind of in spite of all that. Not in spite of all that, that's the wrong phrase. I've been just playing it and enjoying my time with it, and never have I felt like it was a grind, which is really interesting. Because I've never had that happen with a Pokemon game before. I always ended up giving up. Also, it does not hurt. This is one of the best looking... I mean, it's easily the best looking Pokemon game ever made. But it's one of the best looking games on the Switch. It really does capture the magic of the Pokemon universe. Makes me excited to play it. And it makes me excited to kind of find what other Pokemon are out there. You know, and I think the other piece that really kind of brings it home for me, is that I can play it with my daughter. You know, she loves Pokemon. She loves Pikachu. We have pictures of her and her Pikachu toys and her Pikachu fan art all over the place on our Instagram. You can find that at instagram.com/engagefamilygaming. But man, the experience of sitting down and playing a video game with my daughter that she is happy to play, it really is a great experience. And it's one that I am gonna cherish. I mean, she's only 6, right? And so it's not easy to play games with her. And here we are, you know? I mean, I feel the same way about this that I did about Skylanders with my older sons, right? Like, Skylanders was a game that really kind of grabbed them and gave me an opportunity to, you know, I really enjoyed them. And it gave me an opportunity to play a game with them as opposed to around them. And that is something that I will, you know, I'm going to cherish those memories. So, and I think a lot of people feel the same way. I've gotten a lot of messages from parents kind of about the same stuff. That they, you know, that they finally get to play a Pokemon game with their kids and kind of ignite that fandom without, you know, having to resort to cheap tricks. So that is my second, you know, the second to last, the penultimate game. And,
last but not least, my game of the year, the Engaged Family Gaming game of the year for 2018 is Marvel's Spider-Man. I've talked about this game a lot, so I certainly won't belabor the point. However, there are two points. There's two ways that Spider-Man for PlayStation 4 really, you know, kind of won in my eyes. First, Insomniac got playing Spider-Man right. Spider-Man is a character that is built around agility and momentum and movement. And in order to really help us understand and really enjoy or appreciate Spider-Man games, you have to feel like Spider-Man. And they made me feel like Spider-Man. I could have played for literal days just swinging around New York. It was that fun. I enjoyed it. I appreciated the work they did. It was beautiful. And it felt like I was playing Spider-Man. Gave me all sorts of different means to swing around buildings or run up walls or, you know, vault off of chimneys, etc. Man, it's a feeling. When I rolled credits on that game, I was actually sad. And the reason for that was that I wanted to play more. I'm glad there's a new game plus. I'm going back in, you know, after the new year, once I get my game back from some of my friends who I had to loan it to. But yeah, I mean, I'm playing that game again because, man, I miss swinging around New York as Spider-Man. And the other thing that they really nailed was the story. You know, I mean, web swinging was so good that I would have absolutely forgiven a hack job of a story. I would have let them just ham fist some silly Spider-Man tropes and let me fight the Sinister Six and, you know, whatever. And it would have been fine. But they really gave me like an alternate universe Spider-Man where he's a little bit older and some of his villains haven't really fully formed yet. And they are a little bit different. And man, did I love every minute of that story. It was one of the best Spider-Man stories I've experienced. So, those two things combined, although the combat also was good, right? I mean, it was nothing revolutionary. Kind of used that Batman Arkham Asylum style combo-based combat, but I really enjoy that. The addition of his cool web gadgets that really, the different web gadgets are useful in different situations and to complete different challenges, that really kind of grabbed me. It was a system I didn't really engage with in the beginning of the game, but towards the end I realized that, you know, using those is very helpful. And man, it added a lot. Realistically, we know they're making another one. some stuff at the end of the game, not going to spoil it, really kind of confirmed that they're making another one, and I'm all in on that. I cannot wait. They're done with DLC. I hope they just go on vacation, enjoy their winter break, you know, their post-release break, come back, put heads down, and give us Spider-Man 2, because, wow, I just can't. So, those are my games of the year. I'd love to hear your thoughts. So here's what I'd love to do. I'm going to share this into the EFG community. But what I would love is for you to join our community by going to engagefamilygaming.com/community and respond to this post. Tell me, what are your games of the year? What are your experiences? And then maybe we'll talk about that on a future episode. Okay? So I hope you guys have a wonderful day. I have arrived. I look forward to talking to you soon. And until next time, don't forget to get your family game on. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.